The following live presentation by Rabbi Benny Friedman is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
There is an image, which to me is a fascinating question. In 1986, there was an Israeli Air Force plane that was shot down over Lebanon. And there was a pilot and a navigator. The pilot's name was never released for obvious reasons. And there is a special unit called the 669, the 669, whose men are really the elite of the elite. And whenever there's a mission over Lebanon, an Air Force mission, so there is a helicopter, which is literally in the air at the border, so that it can scoot in the event of an emergency. And this was no exception. His plane went down over Lebanon. Within about 3 minutes, there was a rescue squad of the Israeli Air Force that was on the scene. They succeeded in literally snatching the pilot from sort of the clutches of the enemy. There's a special harness that's placed around these men. They lower them by a cable from the helicopter. And like something out of the movies, the helicopter swoops in, slows just enough, scoops up, there's a clamp that goes around the pilot, and literally picks them up to safety. And there has to be something a little off with you, when you really stop to think about it, to be the man at the end of that cable. And it's a very difficult question. And unfortunately, the mission was not a complete success, because Ron Arad, the navigator in this particular story, was already too close to the enemy, the Palestinian, the Amal terrorists who had surrounded him. So it was deemed unsafe. There was no way to get in. You know, you don't risk an entire crew. And he is still in captivity. Legends have had him in Iran, and eyewitness reports at some point he was in Lebanon, he was in Damascus. Mostly they think he's in Iran today. 16 years later, we're still trying to get him home. But it raises a very interesting question. Can you do that? Can you put your life in danger to save someone else's life? Now, on the face of it, one would like to think, well, of course. Right? I mean, yeah, what greater mitzvah can there be? Right? But is that so simple? I mean, imagine, pick an individual that you think had a profound impact on mankind, on the world. Pick an individual. You look so like you're thinking about it, so I'm going to give you an opportunity. Give me the name of somebody who's... Einstein. Would you say that Einstein had an important impact on the world? So imagine Einstein is in that helicopter. Does anybody here know Joseph Montoya? No, because you never heard of him. So Joseph Montoya is the one on the ground, right? And Albert Einstein is at the end of the cable. Are we so sure that we should risk the one, the only Albert Einstein to save Joseph Montoya? The Lubavitcher Rebbe's in the helicopter. And he's 15 years old. I mean, think about this. Think about what would have happened, Lolaino, if the Lubavitcher Rebbe had never become the Lubavitcher Rebbe. First of all, you couldn't get a kosher burger in Nepal. That I can tell you. Anywhere you go in the Jewish world and you need a place to go for Shabbat, there's a Chabadnik. They're in the middle of nowhere. It's amazing. You get stuck in Arizona on the freeway, look up, there's a Chabad house there. It's incredible. Nobody knows how they get there. There's a radar tracking satellite Chabad system. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe is lowered at the end of a cable to say, you know, I don't know, Joseph Montoya. That's ridiculous. Who are we to say that we have the right to risk one life for another? I'm not even going to the direction of if God puts this person in danger, then God will decide if he's supposed to get out. And by the way, one of the most powerful tshuvot, one of the most powerful responsum that I've ever seen, is a responsum that was written actually by Rav Ephraim Ashri. Rav Ephraim Ashri was one of the last rabbis of the Kovno ghetto. And it's an interesting story. He was already in his 50s. And at the beginning in Lithuania, especially when the Nazis moved in, they didn't want to panic the Jews, because by this time many of the rumors by 1941 had already circulated to the east. So they were trying to create sort of an illusion of safety, right? And they didn't want them to know where they were really headed. So they created all sorts of work battalions, we'll have jobs, we'll create industry. But they couldn't really find anything for a 55, 58-year-old rabbi to do on a labor battalion. But it bothered them that this rabbiner, this rabbi, this old man was walking around town and he had nothing to do. So they found him a job. They bought him a Keystone Cops outfit, a ridiculous-looking helmet. And they put him in charge of a warehouse, guarding a warehouse. He became, after a while, interested as to what was really going on in this warehouse, why people were going in and out, high-ranking officers, etc., and what the boxes were that were being brought in for storage inside this warehouse. So eventually he got a little curious, and he took a look. Turned out that this was one of the sites for depositing the wealth of what was soon to be the extinct Jewish race for the museum that was going to be created in Berlin after the war. Right? They were going to have a museum of the extinct Jewish race in Berlin, and they were collecting exhibits. Now, most of what they collected, the exhibits in the extinct Jewish race, were what? What was the largest item? Books. Jewish books. So he convinced one of the officers to let him catalog the books. Nazis love this. Efficiency, right? To catalog them. How can we catalog them? We don't know them. They're Hebrew. So basically what the Nazis had done was they'd taken a tremendous Torah scholar and they'd given him a library. And of course, word spread in the ghetto that Rav Chaim Ashri had access to this farm, and people started bringing him their questions. You know, we live in a society that's focused on answers. Everybody wants to know what the answer is, right? In fact, the education of our children is all predicated on answers. In Israel, there's a certain type of test. It's a multiple choice test. You know what they call it in Israel? Mivchan Amerikai. It's an American test. Why do they call it an American test? Because, right, it's true. Because you have three choices. You always know that you can, you know, sort of, you can slide out one of them. And it was like, unless you're really off, you're going to figure out which two out of the three are the more probable. And basically, all you have to do when you show up to a test is bring a coin, and you flip it, and statistically you'll pass. Right? And you know, I had a teacher who used to do these tests and used to throw in a ridiculous question just so that he can ream out one of the students for actually thinking the absurdity of such a particular response. When people want the answer, and that's what we do, we train our children, right? PSATs and SATs and LSATs and GMATs, all the ATs, right? They all want the answer. I once gave a class on the meaning of God, and somebody came over to me at the end of the class and said, what's the answer? It's the question. So the questions that were asked of Rav Avraham Ashri are so powerful. Can you make a Seder and four cups of water? Do you make a blessing if you're forced at gunpoint to eat on Yom Kippur? And one of the questions that stands out, if you're in a death march and someone falls by the side of the road, are you allowed to step out of the march to try to help them back in? On the one hand, you're clearly saving a human life. A fellow falls by the side of the road on a death march, you know it's only a matter of moments before they're going to kill him. So you're saving a person's life, no doubt about it. On the other hand, if they catch you doing this, they'll shoot you on the spot. So you have the right to step out of the line and to do it. And what fascinates me is even the motivation for the question. The motivation for the question is clearly, I want to do this. So, that's good. What we do, we should do for the right reasons. All of which leads me to the beginning of this week's portion, which is very, very difficult. There is something about this beginning, the beginning of this week's portion, given the parameters that we've just set, that does not make sense. So open up to Perek Yudbet. So I'm going to read, and you tell me what bothers you. You with me here? This is, by the way, the essence of learning. I want to see what bothers us. Okay? Vayomer Hashem al Avram. So Hashem says to Abraham, Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha mibet avicha. Get out for you from your country, from your birthplace, from the house of your father, El Aretz Asher Areka, the land that I will show you. Anything bother you? Just out of curiosity. Pardon?
Redundant.
Redundant. What's redundant? Interesting.
Hashem is telling him to go from your land. Obviously he's going from his relatives, from his father.
Okay. Okay. We have to understand, and I don't know if we're going to get to all the questions, but we have to understand, what's this list? To leave your country, to leave your birthplace, to leave the house of your father. If you're leaving your country, you're leaving the house of your father. Interesting question. By the way, anything else bother you about that? It's also strange. First of all, just to understand a little parameter here, right? What makes this significant, this is really the first conversation that God has with Abraham. Period. So this is the first instance that a Jew is, at least in the Torah, having a conversation with God. And of course, it's also interesting why Abraham is the first Jew, but let's take that as a given for now. And it's interesting that the first thing God says to Abraham is, get out! Which is a rather strange way to start a relationship. But okay. Okay. But there is one word here that fascinates me. Fascinating. Okay? Does anybody pick it up? There's a word here that does not need to be there. Okay? Lecha. Do you see that? And Hashem says to Avram, go lecha for yourself. Rashi actually says here, letovatcha ulahanatcha. For your own good and for your own welfare. God says, just do it. No, this is going to be good for you. And what does he mean to do it for you? V'yaschal l'goy gadol, I'll make you into a great nation. V'avarechecha, and I will bless you, which means wealth. V'yagadla shemecha, and I will make your name great. I'm going to give you great form. V'heyeh bracha, and it will be, or you will be, a blessing. So Hashem says to Avram three things. I'm going to give you three things. I'm going to give you progeny. You're going to have children. I'm going to give you wealth, and I'm going to give you fame. By the way, what is it that God is asking Avraham to do? To leave and to go somewhere. Do you notice that? It doesn't tell him where he's going. It just says, go to the land that I will show you. And somehow this is perceived to be, I mean, this is an enormous moment in world history and Jewish history. This is the point that Avraham sets out on the journey. There's a tradition, it's actually in the fifth chapter of Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avot, that Abraham was tested 10 times. Supposedly this is the first test. Not a simple thing. Leave your home. Leave your family. Leave everything you know and hold dear. To go off to some land where they eat falafel and they drive like maniacs and they, you know, it's a challenging thing. I remember. My brother told me he had the same or very similar experience. I was in Israel and I decided I was going to stay. And then I was back in America for Pesach and I was going back to go to the army. Right? And I had been already in yeshiva for a year, so I knew some Hebrew, but I was going back to go to the army. I thought, like, you know, I got on the plane. Technically, when you get on an LL plane, you're in sovereign Israeli territory. So I thought, like, wow, I'm an Israeli. I'm going to the army. And I felt like, you know, I was waiting for the stewards to say, you know, really, come to first class. I mean, you know, you're, right? And I don't remember what it was. I think that, I asked the stewardess or something, or there was whatever. Oh, I remember what it was. They had brought me a tray, and the orange juice. You know, you get those little cups of orange juice, which are specially designed to get all over your pants. They really did. It's a very special thing. It's like, pour in as much orange juice as you can, pour in the smallest cup, and then see if you can actually do this on a moving plane. Right? Well, fine. So I get there, and somehow somebody decided to make it even crueler. They must have stuck a pin in it or something just to have fun with the Americans. All the juice had drained out. Right? And it was like in the thing. When I opened up the plastic, it was a pleasant experience. So I, you know, called it, because you can't push the button for the flight attendant, because, you know, then they'll never come to you, because it's a chap. So I waited until somebody passed by, and I just, you know, whatever. I said, listen, you know, there's juice, maybe you could help me, whatever. She looks at me, she goes, Pose la America. Here is not America. Right? So I was like, what? Where is that coming from? So it's a difficult thing to go off, to go into the land. Nobody knows where you're going, right? And that's always been my impression. You're a 7-year-old guy with no money and no kids. And God comes to you and says, listen, I'll tell you what, I want you to do me a favor. Come to Israel, I'll make you rich, famous, and I'll give you kids. This is going to be a big test. Duh. So what's really going on here? That's my underlying question. But let's see what else bothers you. Okay? Pasuk Gimel. Va'avarcha mevarchecha. And I'm going to bless those who bless you. U'mikalelcha aor. And those who curse you, will I, let's say, curse. Anybody, any comment here? There's a balance in blessing. If you look at you need to look at the Hebrew. In the Hebrew, it's avarcha mevarchecha. I will bless those who bless you. U'mikalelcha aor. La'ur, ur, or ura, is a form of curse. It should say, u'mekalelcha akalel, and those who curse you, I will curse. So there's an imbalance here. But I'm talking about something more fundamental. But where does this fit in? Where does this list? If you came to me, you know, we're having a discussion, right? We're on the sixth floor, and I say to you, listen, come work for Israelite. Come work for Israelite. If you work for Israelite, everybody who blesses you, I will bless. And everybody who curses you, I'll curse them. Thank you very much. You know, I mean, would you expect to hear that? Like, I can understand I'm going to give you wealth. Yeah, that works for me. I got that. I know where to file that one. You know? I'm going to give you children. They'll be healthy. I can file that one too. What is this? What is this? You are so... Can you imagine? You go over to somebody at their wedding. You know? You're the best. Anybody ever curses you, I'm going to curse them out. You're an off-imbalanced individual. I don't know who you are and who invited you. What is that? This is a very strange line. No? It's fascinating to me that we read these things. Now, somebody, all of you must understand this better than I do, because nobody didn't bother anybody. Or we just read them and it's so part of the lexicon that we don't think to ask the question. But this is a very strange line.
Let me ask you a question. This line, okay, do you think this is like, that this is a separate topic? Or is this a continuation of the list? Because there's a list of things that God's going to do for Abraham if Abraham comes to the land of Israel. There's a list, right? So is this part of the list, or is this something separate? I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to bless you, let's say, with wealth. I'm going to give you fame. Ve'yeh bracha, you'll be a blessing, whatever that is. And I'm going to bless whoever blesses you and curse whoever curses you. So there's really six things or five things I'm going to give you. This could be. Let me ask you another interesting question. If I have a list, okay? Let's say you find a piece of paper, and there's a list. What's the automatic question you ask? If you saw a list and it said peanut butter, skiing, mojo, you know, you think, what's the connection? Is there a common theme to this list? Or is it just completely random? Why is this sitting here? Now, by the way, understand, this is the beginning of the mission of the Jewish people. So Hashem is telling Abraham that if you will go to the land of Israel, these are the things that I will give you. In other words, this is what you need to have. So what's the common theme here? Is there a common theme here? Which, by the way, may fit very well with history. In other words, those who stand up against you, I'm going to do away with them somehow. I'm going to mystically, spiritually... By the way, he could have chosen many words. Could have said, whoever stands against you, I will destroy. Whoever curses you, I will destroy. So it's an interesting question, what the concept of blessing and curse really is. And I don't know that we're going to get a chance to get there, but it's a fascinating question. But okay. What is that line? V'nivrachu v'cha kol mishpachot ha'adamah. And through you will be blessed all the families on the face of the earth. What is that line? Is that part of this list? Or is that somehow separate from the list? Now, if it's separate from the list, then we have to come up with a list which is completely different from whatever idea this suggests. That you, through you will be blessed all the families on the face of the earth. Right? If, however, it's part of the list, which, by the way, would mean that there are seven items on the list, right? So then, what's the common theme? By the way, it's interesting that we're assuming that this is reward, which is a possibility, which leaves us with a question. Give me another possibility.
Whatever's not on the list, I got you covered?
Well, no, in other words, whatever these things are on the list, whatever this list really is.
So we're saying this list is a list of rewards, maybe. Can you think of something else this list could be of? A list of what? Responsibilities?
A promise?
Incentives? Interesting question. What exactly is this list? Consequence? Are these consequences? And what is this doing here? Right? Okay. So now take one more look and then we'll see if we can have some fun with this. Vayelech Avram kasher diber elav Hashem. Vayelech ito Lot. So Avram goes and Lot goes with him. Avram ben chamesh shani v'shivim shanam tzeitom mecharan, and Abraham is 75 years old when he leaves Haran. Okay? Anything about this? Bother you, yeah.
Last time the beginning says, go to your relatives.
Right, that's an interesting question. Where does Lot come from?
Well, if you look, actually, that's a good point. I mean, we're going to go there, but if we're there, look at verse Lamed Aleph, 31. Right, remember, so some of us studied this last week. Terach actually began this journey. Vayikach Terach et Avram beno. Terach takes his son Avram, v'et Lot ben Haran ben beno. He takes his grandson, the nephew of Abraham, Lot. So Lot moves out of Mesopotamia, goes to Haran, well not Mesopotamia, goes to Haran from Bavel, from Babylon, or whatever, from Ur Kasdim, and so Lot is there. So Lot decides to go with Amram. It's an interesting question why it has to mention this here, right? What's the difference between Vayelech ito Lot, and Lot goes with him, in verse 4, Pasuk Dalid, and Vayikach Avram et Sarai ishto v'et Lot ben Achiv, and verse 5, where Avram is taking Lot. So which is it? Does Lot go with Avram? Or does Avram take Lot? And what's the difference between those two? Anything else bother you about verse 4? There's something there that should not be there. If God tells you to do something and you do it, then obviously you did it as God told you. So what's that doing there? Unless it's some big pat on the back that God needs to give himself. Okay. He takes his whole family. By the way, where does verse 5, take a look at verse 5, Pasuk Hei, Vayikach Avram et Sarai ishto, and Avram takes Sarah, and Lot, and all of their property,
And all of the souls that they made in Haran, that's a fascinating statement, I'm not going to go there right now, but there was like a whole crew. This is, by the way, the original Israelite retreat. It's true. They take this whole crew, and they go. They get away. They retreat. Get a little air. Go to the mountains. Tremendous. Look where verse 5 is, and look where verse 4 is. It says that Avram went as God commanded him, and Lot went with him. And he's 75 years old. And he took him. Does anything bother you about that? About the order, about the context? Right, so that's one question. What was going on with Lot? Was Lot taken? Was Lot going? Or can anybody suggest anything else? Pardon? Okay, that's verse 5. Look at verse 4. Vayelech, he told Lot, and Lot goes with him. So which is Lot going with him, or is Lot being taken? I wonder if maybe Lot can't decide what to do. Lot's struggling. Wants to go. He doesn't want to go. He wants to go. He doesn't want to go. He's going with him. He's not going with him. So Avram just grabs him along. Maybe Lot is there, but is he really there? Interesting question. But what about the order here? Avram goes just like God said. Lot goes with him. Avram's 75. And Avram takes his... we were there already. Right? Verse 5 should have already happened. You know, if you were reading this literally, and you really wanted to go out on a limb, and I can do that because my wife isn't here. So Avram goes out, and Lot goes with him, and he's so excited Lot's going with him, so they bring, you know, it's like a Lowenbrow commercial, right? They bring a six-pack of beer, they're having a good time. So, you know, I feel like I forgot something. What did I forget? Oh, Sarah, that's right! I remember once, this was like the worst, if the police had ever caught me, I would have been, you know, in jail for child abuse. But I remember once I had to run, I don't remember what it was, I had to run to the store to get something to eat or whatever, and she was like out, and I just ran out the house, and I was like halfway down the block before I realized that one of our kids was in the crib. I just said, oh, forget your baby. Yeah, I forgot my baby, you know, whatever. So what is this doing in Pasuk Hey? Very strange. By the way, they take with them all their wealth, right?
They were promised that they were going to get their wealth on the road.
Right, so they're supposed to get wealth, or they already have wealth. Well, they have property, it's not really wealth. The stocks haven't gone up yet. And by the way, why is wealth so important? I mean, you would think in the Torah there should be some spiritual. You're going to discover the secret of life, man. It's going to be great. No. Can you imagine Lubavitcher Rebbe says, if you come to my shir, so you're thinking, what's he going to say? You'll enter the world to come. You'll taste paradise. I'm going to give you big bucks, buddy. I mean, that's what this is what the Torah is telling me.
Is wealth survival then? I mean, we're talking about like cows and sheep and wheat.
Well, cows and sheep and wheat that is survival is survival. When you multiply it, it becomes wealth. Give me a working definition of wealth. It's very simple. Yeah, wealth is more than what I need. If I have more than what I need, then I'm wealthy. How wealthy? How much more I have than what I need. Right? One person's wealth is another person's poverty, because what you need is partly your perspective. If you think you need a lot, then even if you have a lot, you may consider yourself not to be wealthy. If you think you don't need anything, and you have a lot, you may be very wealthy. So that's an interesting question, what the verses are saying here. Okay. And then, Vayetzu lalechet Eretz HaKanaan, and they go towards the land of Canaan. Vayavo Eretz HaKanaan, and they get to the land of Canaan. Which all seems to be a lot of extra terminology, but okay. So what's going on here? We're gonna stop here. There's a lot going on. Where they go, how they traverse the land, why they traverse the land. What's going on with Abraham? What does it mean that Avram is going to the land of Israel and that the essence is Lachan? I want you to understand something, by the way. The fundamental question here is, why is God telling Avram to go Lacha for you? To the point that Rashi makes the point, Lehanat, Letovatcha, Lehanatcha, this is for your benefit and your wealth. And then the Torah tells me that you're going to receive three major blessings, which are really seven. You're going to have great progeny, and you're going to have great wealth, and you're going to have great fame. And as a matter of fact, the theme of this week's portion is the partial fulfillment of those dreams. The first, if you look in chapter 13, verse 2, right? Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Bet. Avram goes down to Mitzrayim. He has a whole story in Egypt. He comes back up from Egypt. And what do we say? V'Avram kaved ma'od b'mikneh b'kesef u'bazahav. He's heavy with cattle, gold, and silver. So that's wealth. He's given wealth. He went to Israel. Almost as soon as he gets to Israel, there's a famine. He has to leave. Big test. He goes, he comes back, he's wealthy. Second, if you look in chapter 14, verse, I guess 18, 19, there's a very strange story here. There's a tremendous battle. And this is actually, it's interesting, there are historical records of this great war that are outside of Jewish text and Torah tradition, but that's another discussion. But if you look in chapter 14, verse, where is it? 18, 19. So they have this great battle. Avram goes to do battle against the five kings, basically the empire of the day, and somehow he succeeds. And when he succeeds, right, so verse 18, Umalki Tzedek Melech Shalem, Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, comes out and brings out bread because they've won the war. Avram basically single-handedly wins the war, frees the captives, gets Lot. The king of Sodom, one of the kings against who he fought, offers him everything. He doesn't want anything. Vayivarcheu, and Malki Tzedek blesses him and says, Baruch Avram Lelion, blessed is Abraham. Abraham achieves fame. He is the general who defeated the mightiest empire of the day, the five kings. And then, of course, the third, he will achieve progeny. So, the end of this week's portion, he's given a son. He has a son, Yishmael. If you look in chapter 16, verse 15, Batelet Hagar, and Hagar gives birth to Avram ben, Vayikra Avram Shem ben Oshel Hagar Yishmael. And he calls him Yishmael. So here you have a 75, 80-year-old guy having a child. So he achieves wealth. He achieves fame. He achieves progeny. And by the way, the promise to have Yitzchak is also contained in this parsha. So the theme, almost, of this portion, of this whole story, which is really the portion of the beginning of the Jewish people, is about being promised great things and getting them. Almost as though God is saying, I want you to keep my promise. I promised you bazooka bubblegum. I'm going to give it to you. This is the beginning of Judaism. And it's all hidden in the word lecha, lech lecha. What is lech lecha? And by the way, the words lech lecha are very important. You know, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says that that there are 10 tests that Abraham undergoes. This is considered to be the first, the decision to journey to the land of Israel, for what it's worth. What is the 10th? Anybody? The binding of Isaac, right? And how does the beginning of the story of the binding of Isaac start? And God comes to Avram and he says, Tachnat binchat yechidcha, right? Asher ahavta, take your et Yitzchak, take your son, your only son that you love, Yitzchak, velech lecha el eretz amoriah, elechad harim asher amar elecha. And same terminology, go to you, and just like in the first test, el eretz asher amar elecha, to the land that I will show you, here it's to the mountain that I will show you. Almost as though these are the bookends of the test of Avraham. The theme of Avraham's life. The mission, and therefore, by the way, fundamentally, the mission of the Jewish people is Lech Lecha. We start with it, we end with it. And everything in the middle is encompassed by it. So what is Lech Lecha? What does it mean to go for you? What's the test? And you know, the Rambam makes this very difficult, Maimonides. Because Maimonides, if you look at Maimonides in the laws of Tshuva, right? Is there a Rambam here? Is there a Rambam here? Tough, whatever, don't worry about it. We should have a Rambam, it's a show, right? The Rambam, Maimonides, yes?
But isn't it true you always told me that you benefit mostly for yourself and not for others? In many
but this is the beginning of Judaism.
So?
I mean, I would think that Abraham is supposed to go off to the land of Israel and to do it for God. And what does the Rambam say? Al Yehei, a person should not be like a servant who serves the master in order to receive a prize.
Yeah.
Right? It's in Pirkei Avot, but it's quoted in the Rambam. And the reason I'm quoting it in the Rambam, in the 10th chapter in Halacha Aleph, if I'm not mistaken, is because the Rambam goes on to say, and who is the prime example of this? Who is the prime example of somebody who does not serve for reward, but only for the love of God? You want to take a guess? Abraham.
Yeah.
Take a look. So I understand. Which is it? Is Avram doing it for himself? And by the way, the implication of the verses here is that it's so important that Avram do it for all of these rewards, that he do it lecha, but if he doesn't do it for himself, he has not succeeded in the test. And you don't want to do it for yourself. You don't need it. You don't care about it. It's all for God. Masma, the implication here is that you have failed the test. What can this mean? And I want you to understand, this is so deep. This is the essence of Judaism. This is about what we're really here for. What does Lech Lecha mean? I want to tell you something. We make a mistake. And we think that the goal is God. Is that true? Because if the goal was God, we wouldn't need to be here. Avraham's mission in this portion is not to go to the land of Israel for God. Avraham's mission in this portion is to go to the land of Israel for Avraham. Because before Avraham can do for the world and do for God, first Avraham has to do for Avraham. The first challenge of Avraham is to become Avraham. To become the Avraham that he's meant to be. Now understand here. What's the difference essentially between what Maimonides is saying, that I'm doing this essentially for God, and what the Torah seems to be saying here, that I'm doing it for me? One of them is the motivation, and the other is the goal. The motivation, ultimately, is about God. That I understand. But the goal is not God. The goal is me. And it's very important to understand this. Because when I forget the me in this equation, I get into very dangerous territory. Now, what do I mean here? Think about it. You know, you're not supposed to do things, says the Rambam, for ulterior motives, right? You don't want to do things for ulterior motives. You want to do them for the right reasons. What does the word ulterior mean? The word ulterior means anything that is external, right? Like, for example, if you go to the hospital and you visit sick people, it's a good thing, right? It's a good thing, right? What about if you go to the hospital to visit sick people, but you're only doing it for the money?
For what?
For the money. Somebody says, I'll pay you $50 an hour if you visit the sick children. Say, well, I'm not into sick children. I'll pay you $100 an hour. All right, for $100 an hour, I'll do it. Fine. So you go into the hospital, and there's Nebuch, a sick child, right? He's lying there, chas v'shalom, in bed. Come up and say, hey, how you doing? Okay. So you look pretty sick there. So yeah, I'm pretty sick. Well, I just came to make you feel better. It's really good to see you. Right? So there's something wrong with that, because really, you have an ulterior motive. You just want to make money. So what makes something an ulterior motive? Because it doesn't come from within, right? Only that which is within is not ulterior. Which means, if you think about it, anything that I do that is outside myself actually is ulterior. And only the things that I do for myself, as it were, are not ulterior. And what really is the Torah saying to me? The Torah is saying to me, in order for you to make the world what the world is meant to be, you have to become the Avraham that you're meant to be. It's interesting, in this week's portion, we start off with Avraham. It's only at the end of the portion that he receives the extra hay in his name and becomes Avraham, because that is the theme of this portion. The theme is that Avraham becomes Avraham, that he becomes the person he is meant to become. Lech lecha means you have to go and figure out who you need to be. How often do you meet people who are struggling to figure out who they need to be? You know, we're living in not simple times. And I'm not talking about even the big pictures like what's going on in Israel and Nebuch, but even just in terms of economically. You know, you meet so many people, Nebuch, who are struggling to find a job. There's no job. And I was just talking before to somebody, you know, there's no job. You lose a job. And it can be a very crushing thing to have no job. Because if you have no job, you know, we very often, what do? You go to a party and you meet somebody, you make a conversation. So what's the first thing you ask somebody? What do you do? Ever think about that? What do you do? What about if you went to a party and the first thing you said is, like, who are you, man? Right? So nobody would talk to you because you knew, I don't know what you do.
Unless you're in Jerusalem.
Right? Unless you're in Jerusalem, right. And imagine, I was at a Shabbaton. They labeled it a single Shabbaton, which is a terrible word, but that's okay. No such thing as real singles in this world. We're all paired up with something big. But anyway, so it was labeled as a single Shabbaton. We're going to have a single Shabbaton, and we're going to talk about love and relationships, and everybody's going to love it. Fine. So I get there, it's Friday night dinner, and it's a packed room, there's like 100 people there, right? And the one thing, when I go to these Shabbat dinners, I hate being on the dais. So I made a rule with them. I said, look, I'm willing to come, I'll speak, I'll teach, we'll do, it'll be fun. The chicken will be good. But you can't put me on a dais. I didn't come to be on a dais. I came to meet people, so put me at a table. So fine. So I get there at a table, right? So I stand up, and we're starting to talk about the Kiddush, and I say, you know, if we're going to have Shabbat dinner together, and you should practice this wherever you are this week and every week on Friday night, if we're going to have Shabbat dinner together, you can't have Shabbat dinner if you don't know who you're talking to. It's a terrible thing. People get together, they sit down, and nobody introduces themselves. You don't know the names, you don't know. So let's all take 5 minutes, and everybody at your tables get to know each other. But here's the deal. You can't say what you do. You can't ask what you do, and you can't say what you do. You just have to get to know each other. I sit down, thinking this is a very clever thing. Total silence in the room. Total silence in the room. Nobody knew what to say. What do you say if you can't ask somebody what they do? Right? Right? And the reason for this, so powerful, is because if there isn't a what I do, well then who am I? Now the underlying idea here is that we think that what we do is who we are, because what we do is what gives us our purpose, right? And if I don't have purpose in this world, if I don't know what to contribute, then who am I? But of course that's ridiculous. Because what I have to contribute in this world is not just about what I do, it actually is about who I am. The very fact that I am, what I am, who I am, gives me so much to offer the world. And in fact, if I get so focused and stuck on what I do that I never figure out who I am, I will never really be able to contribute to the world all that I could give. To the extent that sometimes not having a job or losing a job can actually be a blessing in disguise. Because it forces you to consider, you know, I remember we had a student once at Israelite. And you know, at a certain point, I don't go around the room at the beginning and say, so why are you here and how did you find out and whatever, you know. But in the middle of the program, you start talking. And this fellow, I mean, he really stood out, you know, Baruch Hashem, in the old city of Jerusalem, there are not a lot of tall Jews. 6'9" Jews are rare. So when a guy walks in and he's that big, especially at Israelite, you know, Rabbi Aaron and I are not exactly giants, you know. It's like on Saturday night you hold the Havdalah candle, and there's a tradition that you hold the Havdalah candle just the height of, you know, your groom, right? So my wife obviously never took this seriously, right? So, okay. So this fellow walks in, he's a huge guy. Turns out he's a basketball star. He's a big college star. I couldn't tell you, I don't know, whatever. But he's a big college star. And he was going up for a shot in a game, and he came down on his foot and cracked his foot. And they took him off the court. It was a big to-do, you know, a big college star, you know, up and coming. And the coach, you know, came in the halftime, and they were looking at it, they were looking at the field, and they were talking in hushed tones. And the coach knew, because he was a seasoned veteran. He knew. He knew as soon as he heard the crack, as soon as he saw the injury. And he decided that the biggest mitzvah he could do for this player was to clue him into the fact that his career is finished. Don't waste 2 years in therapy and running and whatever. You should know your career is over. You will not play NBA basketball. And this guy went into a tailspin. Because, you know, for as long as he could remember, he was the jock. He was the basketball player. He was the NBA star. And all of a sudden, he wasn't going to be a basketball star. So if he couldn't play basketball, then who was he? And so on the face of things, you think it's absurd to imagine that all you are is a basketball star. Because there's so much more of who you are. But we get so stuck in what we do, we forget who we are. And who we need to become. Because Baruch Hu says to Avram, you need to become the person that you will be. Because that persona, that energy, is the gift that you give back to the world. And I want you to understand just how deep this really is. You know, if you understand that the goal in my relationship with God is to relate to God through the self, through me, and if you understand that right at the beginning of the birth of the Jewish people, the first vehicle for creating a better world is creating a better me, then you can never get stuck in the terribly dangerous mistake of thinking that all that matters is the world I create. The world I create is not all that matters. Equally important is the me that's creating it. Because if I take the me out of the equation, if all that's important is the world I'm creating, the God that I'm serving, if the me doesn't enter into the equation, then I can do anything for God. And I can do anything in the name of God. Including strapping myself into explosives and walking into a pizzeria, or taking a plane into a tower like the World Trade Center. Because at the end, all that matters is what I do for God. And you can do anything in the name of God, because you don't really matter. Only God matters. And Judaism says that's not true. Hashem created each of us in the image of God, and therefore each of us is valuable, and each of us is crucial, and each of us is important. And it's precisely Libriot, it's precisely the attempt to become the me that I need to be, that is what creates the world that we're trying to create for the God that we want to have a relationship with. And if I lose the me in that equation, then the world I'm trying to create will go dangerously askew. And I wonder if that isn't what the Pasuk is trying to say here. It's not that you're doing it for the money. It's that Hashem says, the consequences of you becoming what you can become, the knowledge that you have become the Avram you're meant to be, will result in the fame and the fortune. If you're doing it for the fame, you know, it's interesting. Pirkei Avot says, if you run after fame, you'll never find it. It's actually honor. If you run after honor, you'll never find it. And if you run away from it, it will always find you. And you can't run away from it in order that it find you. You have to run away from it because it isn't the issue. But you will know that you're doing whatever you're supposed to be doing when in the process of running it catches up with you. If your name becomes known, it has nothing to do with what you're doing. That's a sign that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was trying to do something with you. And you should know that it's a very, very dangerous recipe. I want you to know, being unknown is a very simple, pleasurable, and easy thing. Becoming known is a very challenging thing. You look at the world of Hollywood and the movie stars, it's not so simple. It's much, much easier to be an unknown. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I give you this v'nivrechu v'cha, the through you, specifically, is how you can be the vehicle for blessing the entire world. You know, and I'll give you just one example, which I, to be honest, I have not figured out. I'm still trying to process it. So some of you know that, you know, a little over a year ago, I was sitting in a pizzeria, and a person walked in and blew himself to bits, and it was a terrible, terrible experience, and there were 18 people killed. And I walked out, Baruch Hashem, without a scratch. And this was on a Thursday. And I was sitting Friday, Erev Shabbos, and you know, you can imagine, your mind is going in so many different directions. And we were supposed to go to my wife's parents for Shabbos, but I could not. I sat down, I started thinking about, you know, what was going on, and I started writing a letter to my dad. I wrote him a letter on email, sent it, I CC'd it to one person, to Morty. And that was it. I didn't send it to anybody else. And over the next week, it was a mind-boggling experience. This thing, there was a fellow who came to Israelite, I think last year, who does this for a living. He statistically studies, you know, based on where it appears in the press and where it appears, whatever. And his opinion, and this is months ago, was that this particular letter reached over 2 million people. So when you experience something like that, you realize it has absolutely nothing to do with you. It's almost like Hashem is just stirring a pot, and you can't figure for the life of you why Hashem is stirring the pot. In fact, I remember I was talking to Morty, so we had just come to America. We were coming to America, and I had this discussion. You know, you're coming to Florida, you're coming to New York. Like, how are we going to introduce you to people? How are people going to know who you are? How, you know, we have to find a way to introduce you, but it should be tactful and not like, you know, start calling up every organization, but if he wants to give a share. And the next week, every federation, every organization, CNN, MSNBC, they're all calling me because they want an interview. And I'm sitting there looking at my wife, scratching my head, and saying, do you figure this out? I can't figure this out. I have no idea what's going on. No idea what's going on. Because Baruch Hu, sometimes he stirs the pot. And I want you to know, more crucially, this is true as a Jewish people. Did you ever look at the globe and try to find Israel in the globe? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous how the world is spending so much time focusing on this one little pisher piece of land. Unbelievable. The fact that this little piece of real estate, that this small people, you know, I was once on top of Masada, and it's a long story, but I met up with this group, this Baptist group, and they were touring, and we got into a discussion, and we're on our way in the cable car, and we're talking, and at one point he says, how many Jews are there in America? And I was about to answer what I think. He says, another guy says, I think it's like 50 million. 50 million. And another guy says, no, I think it's more. I think it's more. I didn't want to break there. You know, I said, okay, I'm not going to say anything. You know, fine. And people assume this because there's so much going on. And that's perhaps what this is about. We need to become who we're meant to be. We need to do it as individuals. We spend too much time looking for who we're looking for and what we're looking for, instead of becoming who we're meant to be, so that it will all find us. And it's true as a people. We need to become the people that we're meant to be. We need to focus on self as a people. Because if we become the people that we're meant to be, then everything else will just work out. And that is the challenge of Lech Lecha.
This presentation by Rabbi Benny Friedman has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.